Thank you. I just came from the rapid fire, so I promise to slow down just a little bit, but hopefully, I won't slow down too much. So what I want to do today is just kind of give you a brief background of the North Carolina Violent Death Reporting System, and then just a couple of examples of how we've been using the data and some partnerships that we've developed and some special projects. So in North Carolina, we've had funding since 2003, but the data collection kind of started in earnest in 2004. There are currently over 20,000 violent death cases in the North Carolina Violent Death Reporting System. Any given year, there's about 240 or so law enforcement agencies that provide data, which means that there was a violent death that occurred in their jurisdiction. Even though we have many, many more law enforcement agencies in our state, I think somewhere in the neighborhood of 600. But any given year, we have to approach about 200 plus. And our staff mostly consists of our project manager, Tammy Norwood, who's in the back, a couple of data abstractors, and they spend 100% of their time and effort on the program. And then there's a couple of people, myself, who's the program director, and some data analysts who spend about 20% of our time on violent death, or sometimes less. And a lot of our funding really actually comes from a lot of different places. So the Violent Death Reporting System, the CDC funds, fund a certain portion of it, but then we have some supplemental funds that fund the rest of our work. And that also includes fellows. We've had a series of CSD fellows, and I think we almost make it mandatory for them to do Violent Death Reporting System work because it's a good project for them to work on. So, really what I wanted to talk about is some of these data utilization partnerships. So we have a number of partnerships with state agencies. Some of them go back to the Department of Aging Services, where we did an adult protective services linkage with data looking at elder maltreatment. For those of you who are at the rapid fire, we've done some work with the Department of Corrections and linking our data there. And so basically, if we see opportunities to link, we feel really inclined to kind of partner with people about that because we've seen the benefits of being able to do this kind of linkage. We work fairly closely with university and other researchers who have used our data. We've got a pretty strong partnership because of the School of Public Health at UNC, but we also have other universities across. We have 56 colleges and universities across the state of North Carolina. And so there's lots of ample opportunity to combine with different people and work with different people. And we have research organizations as well that aren't universities. So RTI is a big contracting agency in our state, based in our state. And we have a couple of folks who are on our advisory board and who have worked with us on various projects. So here are some of those stakeholders. Again, kind of on the academic side, we've kind of broken it out into criminology, sociology, justice, health, social work. So not just the traditional public health folks, and we would love to expand, to some other areas as well. There are nonprofit organizations which we've worked with, one of which I'll describe a little bit more a little later. And then local health departments in our state. We have 100. We have 100 counties. We have 87 health departments, which are virtually one per county, but there's a couple multi-county jurisdictions. Here's a couple of screens from our data use agreement that we have. It's also posted on our web. It's pretty straightforward, and it really boils down to, how are you going to use the data? What are the data parts that you want and need? And talks a little bit about what the restrictions are in terms of their utilization of the data. And so by and large, anyone who has approached us, we've worked with them. Sometimes if it's a simple data request and they're just really needing a number or a few numbers, we kind of generate that, or we point them to a fact sheet or a report that we already have. And then sometimes people will approach us with kind of a project, and sometimes they want the data, which we then give them if they go through the process, or sometimes they'll approach us to kind of partner with them on projects, or we'll approach them back and say, this is interesting, we'd love to work with you on this. So here are the starts of a couple of the projects that I was going to talk about in this session. The first one is really about the North Carolina suicide prevention. And many years ago when I started, we developed a series of fact sheets around violent death, and one of the ones we had was youth suicide in North Carolina. And at the time, the suicide prevention program was housed within public health. It still is. We have a piece of it, but our mental health and substance abuse folks also have it. And when they were doing their work, even though we were in, co-located in the same house and same organization, they weren't really asking for a lot of our data. And so we kind of, I jokingly say, it started with a fact sheet and it really wasn't even requested. Because they were just kind of doing some of the work that they were doing, we were doing the work we were doing, and we hadn't really combined. But I want to tell you that obviously we've expanded. We then made a report that's a really well-received report. It's the Burden of Suicide in North Carolina. We're actually, this is the second edition of it. Once we did the first one, within that first year, there was a request to update it. And it's a long report and a big document, so we decided that we probably couldn't update it every year because we didn't have the capacity or resources, but we would do it periodically, and so this is the latest version. And from that, you know, because we were not only combining some of the violent death reporting system data, but we were also combining some of the non-fatal self-harm information, I think it gave a more comprehensive view of suicide, and it got some of the stakeholders that we wanted to be part of the discussion more engaged and involved. And it evolved even further in 2014 and 15. The state kind of underwent a suicide prevention strategic planning initiative. And so Anna Austin, our fellow, was really almost detailed to that group as part of the planning, part of the sessions, and almost every step of the way, the violent death reporting system was kind of a partner in that. I mean, we brought in the other data as well, but it was a critical element to some of those things. So again, we were quantifying the problem. We were looking at the additional populations that increased risk. And then, of course, for those ones that died, describing the circumstances around the suicides. And these were pretty big meetings for our state. So I think there were more than 80 stakeholders at some of these meetings. And they did a series of at least two big kind of big meetings where everyone who was in part of it came together and were a piece of it. And then there were several kind of subcommittee in various working groups. And one of the working groups was kind of a data group. So I'm not really going to, I'm going to share with you a couple of the slides that were given at the summit, not just to point out and to highlight the data itself, but the type of information that was conveyed to the groups. Because again, I think once we kind of started doing it, it's become, you know, they've gotten a lot of ways in which we could use that data. So, you know, we've described kind of the multiple data sources that we have available in our state and the way the violent death reporting system is organized. But then again, we brought in hospital discharge, emergency department data, the North Carolina YRBS, and then some of the Whiskers reporting as well. So here we have the suicide and self-inflicted injuries for North Carolina. Again, I think for certain groups within that planning thing, these were really critical because they'd only been privy to either the suicide death data or they hadn't seen it kind of all laid out in the same screen or in the same way. And so, you know, the way we were doing it kind of as a burden, I think was a little bit different and unique for them. And again, we cut the data in lots of different ways. Here we have suicide rate by male-female, and of course it kind of flip-flops from the deaths that are more likely male to the attempts that are more likely female. And again, just the, you know, that bottom line there is the suicide rate overall, but you can see these spikes within kind of the hospitalization rate and the emergency department visit rate. And again, and towards skewed much toward the younger populations as well. Although it gets interesting when you then parse some of it out. And particularly the suicide, you can see here by male and female, that over the lifespan, you know, you get these very different things, both in middle age and then much later in the age. And these are groups historically in North Carolina that weren't really talked about. And we even had a suicide summit not that long ago where, again, the focus, even though it's been shifting gradually towards some of these other at-risk populations, it was still skewed heavily toward youth suicide. Not to say that there's anything wrong with focusing on some youth, but there's some other populations at risk. And again, looking at some of our veteran suicide rates for ages 20 and over. And you know, North Carolina is now the third largest state in terms of kind of ex-veteran populations. So after California, Texas, I think it's then North Carolina, in terms of the number of military or former military personnel. And then again, you know, another population at risk, LGBT, these suicidal behavior among North Carolina high school students. This is from the North Carolina Youth Risk Behavior Survey. So again, even though the violent death wasn't the entire source of all that data, it played kind of a critical role, and I think people are now counting on some of the BDRS data from our state as being some of those measurable outcomes that have been incorporated into lots of the strategic plans and different elements from that plan. So two more quick projects, one of which was the Domestic Violence Project. So we worked with the North Carolina Coalition Against Domestic Violence. They had approached us at various points. There were several definitions of domestic violence, particularly domestic violence homicide, and they were trying to understand differences between some of those counts. So they were counting some deaths that occurred. They were actually using media clippings, and you know, when I first heard that, I was kind of mortified that that was the way that they were doing it. But so we were able to look at it, and they actually did a fairly good job. They were capturing about 75% of the deaths that were occurring in the state. But, right, unfortunately, they weren't catching 25%. And they were catching them much sooner than we were. So just out of the newspapers, out of their coalitions, out of the local things, they were hearing about these domestic violent deaths. And through the processing of VDRS, we were able to identify an additional 25 cases per year, albeit much later. So they get it much earlier. We kind of then historically add to it. And of those 25 deaths, many of them were males, which were, again, kind of an interesting kind of thing that was happening. Another project, law enforcement and violent death, we worked with some folks at RTI. We looked at sworn law enforcement officers. From 2004 to 2008, we found 48 violent deaths. Among law enforcement officers, about 58% were suicide and 40% homicide. And then if you were just at the rapid fire, Anna talked about the violent death among first responders. And again, that's just an extension of some of that work. So these are just a few examples of some of the work that we've been doing to try to take from the collecting of data to the dissemination of data to hopefully some of the prevention of some of these things. So we have a lot of our stuff at our website. We've been fortunate enough to periodically you know, write up articles around some of these things, and we're working on a couple of others at the moment, so hopefully there'll be more from North Carolina Violent Death Reporting System. And that's all I have for this presentation. Thank you so much. Do you want to do questions now?
Yeah.
Okay. If there's any questions, we'll take them for this one now, and then for the other one, we'll wait. Yes?
Data?
Yeah, no, most of it is coming. The data that was presented here at the slides were coming from the hospitalization data, okay. and from the emergency room department data. It's hard to discern a little bit from self-harm versus attempts, mm-hmm. and so that's been a struggle that all the groups who've been kind of after that have found that, you know, there's also, if you look at North Carolina, and I think a lot of other states, underreporting concerns in terms of, like, well, was this really an attempt or not? And so we get a lot of undetermines that kind of look like they're potentially self-inflicted harm.
And you use ICD-9 and ECODE?
Mm-hmm. Okay. We use the same ECODEs that and other things that the CDC uses for their injury matrix. So if it gets coded that way, then that's how we've accounted for it. Yes?
Hi.
Hey. The veteran data for death certificates, it's a part of our death certificate. Historically, though, it wasn't actually part of the electronic record, and our violent death reporting system was having to go and abstract the data and get it. But now, in the newer version of the death certificate in our state, the electronic portion has been expanded, and we're actually getting that data. From 2014 on, we'll be getting it electronically. Yes?
So those 25% of deaths that you were getting later that were not from the media
For the domestic violence homicides?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that were largely men. Is that mostly male partner? violence, or not necessarily?
Not necessarily. I don't remember all of them. And I remember on any given year there were about, like, I think on average around 20, or sorry, about 100 domestic violent deaths, and then we were adding about 25. So it's hard with those cases to describe all of them. But I think what was a little bit unique about it was, I think that, again, they were kind of skewed, just male in general, relative to the group that that they were capturing themselves. But it wasn't that we. It was interesting. We could go back and look at some of those things as well. Yes?
I'm just curious as to what type of suicide prevention efforts have actually been undertaken, and are any of them effective or have been shown to be effective?
Well, we hope they're going to be effective. We're part of historically we've received some SAMHSA Garrett Lee Smith funding, but our funding cycle ended last year and we were not refunded, but we've resubmitted this for this year, so who knows if we'll have it again. And there was a kind of a change in how they were approaching some of these, but we did a lot of gatekeeper training among schools, and so we had huge efforts with our Department of Public Instruction, which is our health, it's our education department, that are working with all the school departments to basically do make sure the janitor, the librarian, the coach, they all knew kind of the signs and symptoms of a potential suicide, or if someone mentioned that they were some kind of suicide thought or idea, that they would take it seriously and that they would kind of go and intervene. And I think a lot of times people would hear those kind of things, but then they wouldn't know what to do. And so we were trying to give them some of the tools. So there have been some ongoing evaluations of the training of some of the folks. And the suicide prevention program, I can't tell you how many thousands of schools and people that were trained for that process, but I know that they were also trying to keep tabs of how many people were identified as part of that. Anna, do you, or Tammy, do you guys remember how many students have been referred into that program?
They usually don't talk about that number because the teacher who they refer somebody, they fill out a paper form, but there are a lot of teachers who actually don't go follow through with that process. I don't think they have an accurate count. But I think, you know, in the last grant cycle, they trained over 1,000 school staff in this training, and they did how to be an ally focusing on LGBT youth. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, some other, the Division of Mental Health is doing some additional training.
Right, but we understand. I mean, we think evaluation is key too, but unfortunately, a lot of the fundings can barely get you to do something with fidelity in terms of an evidence-based program, much less evaluate it. So, we try to do our best with some of the limited resources that we have. Yes?
Well, I just wanted to add, I'm from the Suicide Prevention Resource Center, and we provide technical assistance to the Garrett Lee Smith State Campus and Tribal grantees. And last year and this year for the RFA that you recently submitted and hopefully will be funded for, there's been a really big emphasis on data surveillance for suicide deaths and attempts, which is really hard to get, as everyone in this room knows. So SAMHSA is really trying to give technical assistance towards that, and also look in hospitals, emergency department data, and also juvenile justice and foster care to try to see if there's data in there to show that there's an impact, and hopefully over 5 years that you can show that impact, but it's quite difficult to do.
And I'll just end with Richard McKeon from SAMHSA. He was at a conference I was at recently, and he spoke of kind of his interest in having the violent death reporting systems, now that there's 32 states, really do play more of a key role in some of the pieces that they're doing in partnering with some of those SAMHSA Garrett Lee Smith grantees, because again, sometimes they have it, sometimes they haven't, and even when they have it, they could probably be extended. So thanks. I'm going to end there because I know the other session we have a slew of presenters. Thank you.